Good morning, everyone. It's 3 a.m. on the morning of April 3rd, and this is my first opportunity for responding to the questions that have come in through the month of March. Once again, I want to thank anyone who has supported the website in whatever way, whether it's by writing in questions or purchasing books or perhaps making a donation. As always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for posting this response and for creating the website in the first place, for making this offering possible in a very direct way. It's a regular work day for me, and I've had a lot of interesting things come in this past month, so we'll get down to it right away. A first person has written in saying, "I have a question that's been torturing me on and off for the last 10 years. Would you say in your experience that the me called Daryl has died, leaving only the absence of separation, the absence of ownership, and therefore only freedom or life expressing itself automatically, or even unconditional love, as in Robert Adams' unconditional love? I.e. no more Daryl, i.e. apparent liberation, so-called. Tony Parsons talks about this a lot and talks about when death happens, then it's all over. The me is gone forever, leaving only life. He says liberation is the end of something that was never happening, apparent separation. Do you resonate with that? Thank you, Daryl. This is a totally heartfelt query, and it almost feels like it could be the last question ever. I can even imagine the complete redundancy of questions because there is no answer. Love and divine madness." Okay, so we're starting off with a biggie here. So first portion of this question, would you say in your experience that the me called Daryl has died, leaving only the absence of separation, the absence of ownership, and therefore only freedom or life expressing itself automatically, or even unconditional love, as in Robert Adams' Love? So, let's see. This way of putting it isn't my natural way of putting it, so in what might be called my apparent experience of all of this, all that's really acknowledged now, the bottom line, the only thing, or the only aspect of life that I can truly acknowledge, is a happening that has no explanation whatsoever. So there's the happening of this moment, and it's just a big event. It's just a liveliness or a happening, an event, a moving, shifting, dancing occurrence. And it has no explanation whatsoever. So even these apparent words that are coming up right now, there's no way of saying what this is. It's just happening. So if I use the word Daryl, that's all that it can actually refer to. Now, in this totally mysterious event, what we would call the happening of this moment, words, apparent words, still come up. There is this situation where apparently these words are coming out in response to a number of questions that have come in during the month, over this last month. But all of that, with all of that, there is simply the deep acknowledgement that this is a totally mysterious event that's occurring. And it's all happening automatically. So let's see, there isn't usually any attempt to put this in words as to what my apparent experience actually is. So let's just go through some of this phrasing that this person has used. Does this leave only the absence of separation? Well, it doesn't really leave the absence of separation, because I don't think in terms of separation anymore. So it's more just the happening of this moment is just one big event, or there is just this event. There isn't any feeling of anything separate from this event. There's just the event. Is that the absence of ownership? Well, usually thoughts don't come up in that kind of terminology. So there's just this event doing what it does. It just plays out in whatever way it does. Does this leave only freedom? No, I can't say it leaves only freedom. It's that kind of terminology doesn't really come up anymore. It's not really applicable. Freedom from what? There is only this event. There never has been anything other than this event. Does it leave only life expressing itself automatically? Yes, that's very naturally the way my apparent terminology would arise. There's just the happening of this moment. So it's not even actually life expressing itself. There's just this happening of this moment expressing itself automatically. Does it leave unconditional love? Well, again, that kind of terminology just really isn't applicable anymore. It's just, there's just this mysterious happening of this moment playing out in whatever way it does. So a lot of this terminology is still based on the idea of someone explainable or something explainable. So it doesn't really apply anymore. So he asks, does it leave no more Daryl? Well, Daryl is just a label, and all it refers to now is the happening of this moment. So, you know, the word Daryl still comes up on a regular basis, but it just refers to the totally inexplicable happening of this moment. And that doesn't mean I sit around thinking, oh, Daryl is a totally inexplicable happening. It's just, there's just this happening. And even if the word Daryl apparently arises, it just refers to this happening. There isn't any urge to explain this happening in any way whatsoever. So I don't sit around thinking about freedom or life expressing itself or unconditional love or the absence of separation or the absence of ownership. All of that terminology does not legitimately apply to this event. There's just this event. doing what it does, and essentially there's no belief or no urge to explain this in any way whatsoever, because there's no belief that it can be explained in any way whatsoever. Apparent words still come and go. Apparent thoughts still come and go, but all of that is a totally mysterious event expressing itself automatically. So this person goes on to say, Tony Parsons says that liberation is the end of something that was never happening, apparent separation. And this person wonders if I resonate with that. So yes, exactly. Apparent liberation is the end of something that was never happening. But so, yes, the apparent separation was never happening. But also, liberation isn't happening either. It's only apparent liberation. So, yeah, it's kind of tricky here. The realization of this totally mysterious event doesn't give the intellect anything to work with. So initially, when there is this apparent realization that life is a total mystery, it seems as though there is this realization, but once it's acknowledged that there's no way of explaining what's happening here in any way whatsoever, even the story of an apparent liberation becomes a total fantasy. There is this attempt to explain what's happening in this moment, and to believe that it can be explained leaves you in the realm of stories. Once it's acknowledged that the happening of this moment can't be explained in any kind of legitimate way, in any way whatsoever, then there is this tacit acknowledgement of an event that can't be explained in any way whatsoever. So it's just the happening of this moment. And there's no ultimate urge to explain it in any way. There is no feeling that there is anything other than this event. Now, within this event, or a portion of this event, is still presenting apparent thoughts, apparent words. So the labeling function still functions. The storyline function still functions. But what becomes more interesting is that it's functioning all on its own. And that function itself, that dynamic, can't be explained in any way whatsoever. Even when the labels are arising, the labels, the so-called labels themselves, are a totally mysterious event, simply eventing. So it's not necessarily the melting away of the apparent storyline of a person and a world, of a body and a mind, but it's the melting away of any belief in that apparent storyline. The melting away of the focus on those kinds of explanations, because there's the realization that those explanations can't really be applied to the event of this moment. Many of the traditions and many of the independent teachers over the apparent centuries have brought this down to a very simple fact that there's a basic illusion, basically an apparent illusion in this moment for most apparent people, and that is that life has a form, and that that form can be described in some kind of legitimate way. So it has a name of some kind, an explanation that's true. And these traditions are simply pointing out that that's not true about existence. Existence has no name and it has no form, ultimately. There are these apparent names and explanations, and there are these apparent forms. However, we all know that we weren't born with a set of labels and a set of explanations. We all know that somebody else had to teach us those words, had to teach us to use those words in reference to certain apparent forms. And we all know, those of us who have apparently lived life for a certain amount of time, we all know that every so-called thing is changing, whether it's your body or your moods or your states of consciousness, your ideas, the weather, the planet, the solar system, the galaxy, the universe. It's all moving and shifting and changing. So forms themselves are an illusion. So it's all brought down to this basic acknowledgement that life has no name and form. You aren't something that has a name or any particular form. You aren't something that has a name that actually applies to what you are. A name is simply a sound or a label that points to your apparent form. But you have no apparent form. In any particular moment, the body is changing, your brain is changing, the activities of the mind are changing. You're this event, you're this dynamic. Existence is this event, existence is this dynamic. If you look in what we call the direction of inside you, you find a totally inexplicable happening, moving and shifting and dancing. Moods coming and going, thoughts coming and going, pulsation, vibration. If you look in the mirror, the body's aging. If you look in the direction that we call outside of you or to the external world, we find a larger event that has no particular name and no particular form. It's just everything is changing. Yes, most of it is changing more slowly than the event that we call you. But it's still a moving, shifting, dancing event. If we have certain portions of a great river that are flowing slowly, and then in some little pocket along the edge of the river, there's a choppy movement of water with hundreds of ripples dancing away, it doesn't mean that that portion of the river is separate from the rest of the river. It's just a different expression of the river. The river itself is nothing but a flowing. It has no static presentation. It's not a static event. And it's the same with existence. It's all simply the dancing event of this moment. The warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, pulsing, vibrating event of this moment. So that's all that's coming up in response to this particular question. Let's move on to the next. Okay, this next person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, enjoying your books and talks very much. Here are some quotes from a non-duality book." So he sent in 5 quotes from someone's book. And they run as follows. Realize yourself to be that awareness in which everything appears. Settle in with that as your identity. Simply rest in the bright, open, and present awareness that you cannot deny. Under no circumstances can you doubt your own being, your own presence as awareness. The answer lies in immediate, non-conceptual recognition of the principle of being awareness, which is what you are. See your nature as awareness and not as a separate person. So those are the quotes that he has sent in, and he asks, he comments, he says, "This perspective seems very different to your own. Is that so? Could you comment? Thanks." So I think, or it feels as though this person has written in asking this question, because in all of these quotations, the word awareness is used. And it's pointed out that this basic awareness is our identity. Now, we have to be very careful with these statements, because we would have to be very clear as to what it is that this person, whoever said these phrases, we have to be very clear as to what they're meaning by the word awareness, what they're pointing to by the word awareness. So, out of all of these quotations, there's one in particular that really stands out. It says that the answer lies in the immediate non-conceptual recognition of the principle of being awareness, which is what you are. So being-awareness, which is what you are. Now, in some of these other phrases, it sounds as though this person is saying that there is something legitimately called awareness, and that's what you are. But in this particular phrase, whoever is saying this is pointing out that to acknowledge this awareness, this being awareness, has nothing to do with the words being-awareness. It's saying there is an immediate non-conceptual recognition of the principle of being-awareness, which is what you are. So, if I was to ask you, what is your basic awareness? Your basic awareness, if I was to ask anybody exactly what their basic awareness is, it would have to be just the feeling that there's something happening in this moment. It would have to be the happening of this moment. The impression that there is something happening right now. That's our most basic sense of awareness. The basic sense that something is happening right now. So, my impression from these statements that he sent in is that whoever said these things is pointing to the basic happening of this moment. Now, this person is using the word awareness, basic awareness, or being awareness, the most basic sense of being, which is the feeling that something is happening right now. So he calls it, or she calls it, whoever said this, is calling it being-awareness. They're pointing to this event of the moment with that phrase. Now, they're also saying don't get stuck on that phrase, because the acknowledgement of this happening of this moment, the acknowledgement of the principle of being-awareness, the dynamic of being awareness, is a non-conceptual acknowledgement. It's just an acknowledgement of the happening of this moment, this most basic happening. So I've said this in the past, that each and every apparent person who has this apparent non-dual sensibility points to this event, this happening, in their own unique way. If we look at the happening, the so-called happening of existence, and we look at how it expresses itself, it always expresses itself in a unique way. Within the false appearance of form, if we look at all the apparent different forms that we would call non-dual teachers, each apparent non-dual teacher expresses himself or herself in a unique way, in the same way that each and every apparent form of existence is unique. No two snowflakes are the same. No two trees are the same. No two leaves are the same. We can't find any two expressions of existence that are identical. And so it is with non-dual teachers. So just although I can't say absolutely that this person is pointing to exactly the same thing I'm pointing to, because I don't know who said these phrases, and I don't really know overall what their sense of things is. I mean, initially I would say yes, they're basically pointing to what I'm pointing to. They're simply using a different pointing. They're using different words for pointing. And there will be some people, some apparent people, who apparently relate to this particular way of phrasing it rather than my apparent way of phrasing it. So that it's not that my way is a clearer way of expressing this, and it's not that my way is the right way of expressing this, and somebody else's is not very clear, or somebody else's is the wrong way of expressing it. It's that there are a number of different ways that this gets expressed. And there are those apparent people who relate to one particular expression over another. So I remember, let's see, what immediately comes to mind is there's a couple of sections in the Bible where Christ says that he's like a shepherd who has his sheep in a communal pasture. And if he goes to that pasture, it's only his sheep that will listen to his voice. That the other sheep in the pasture have other shepherds. And those sheep relate to the voice of their particular shepherd. So I don't particularly care for the word shepherd or for that whole analogy, but this points very explicitly to the fact that certain people relate to a certain way of expressing this teaching rather than some other way of expressing this teaching or this pointing. And it's not a matter of one way of expressing it being the one right way. It's that there are a number of different ways of expressing what it is I'm expressing in this website or in this offering. So once again, let's look at some of these phrases. Realize yourself to be that awareness in which everything appears. Settle in with that as your identity. So realize yourself to be the basic awareness of this moment. And your most basic awareness is the feeling that something is happening in this moment. So realize yourself to be this happening in which everything appears. Settle in with that as your identity. Simply rest in the bright, open, and present awareness that you cannot deny. So in this moment, your most basic awareness is the feeling that something is happening in this moment. So this phrase is saying, simply rest in the bright, open, and present awareness that you cannot deny. You can't deny that it feels as though something is happening in this moment. So there's just this happening. Simply rest in the bright, open, and present happening that you cannot deny. And so on. So whether you relate to the words pure awareness, basic awareness, being awareness, or being-awareness, or whether you relate to the word happening, event, present dynamic, it doesn't really matter. They're pointing to this mysterious event, this mysterious occurrence that we might call our most basic sense of awareness or simply an inexplicable happening. Whichever one you relate to is fine. Again, I can't say absolutely, but it seems as though this person is, you know, the person who uttered these phrases is pointing to basically what I'm pointing to. Okay, next person has written in saying, having just watched your Conscious TV interview, the question I would like to ask you is this. What is the nature of the intelligence that is behind Kundalini in all this? In particular, I am thinking of one occasion when a physical object, a lady's hairband, appeared directly in the palm of my hand. I loved your interview and connected with all of what you said. However, I am trying to tie in what you said with the mysterious other intelligence that is responsible for overcoming the Newtonian laws of physics that would be required in the appearance of the hairband. I am not alone in experiencing such manifestations in regards to Kundalini, and I fully understand that they have nothing to do with enlightenment, but am baffled in trying to make sense of this in relation to the whole picture, since it certainly seems that there is a conscious intelligence that even knows where a hand is at any given moment. Thanks for taking the time to answer my questions. So, the most essential aspect of this writing is, I'm trying to tie in what you said with the mysterious other intelligence that is responsible for overcoming the Newtonian laws of physics that would be required in the appearance of the hairband. So first of all, Kundalini, this is coming from the Hindu traditions, and Kundalini experiences have to do with the feeling of life as energy. And within Kundalini teachings, it's saying that for most of us, we have a certain energy that lies at the base of our spine, and that for some, that energy is released to move through the rest of the body, to move up the spine to the crown of the skull. And in that, there is enlightenment or realization, ultimately. But that movement of energy, that Kundalini experience, Kundalini energy experience, manifests in all kinds of wild experiences before it ultimately gives rise to what might be known as enlightenment. Within a non-dual perspective, this Kundalini experience is a totally unexplainable event. So as I pointed out in that Conscious TV interview, I don't have any explanation for anything in existence. So I don't have to worry about a Kundalini experience that somehow doesn't fit in with the Newtonian laws of physics, because for me there are no Newtonian laws of physics, ultimately, any more than there is any Kundalini experience. To say that existence has something to do ultimately with laws of physics, or to say that it has something to do with Kundalini energy, makes no sense to me. There's a totally unexplainable happening. Somewhere along the line, someone had to train you to think or to express life in terms of Kundalini experience or Newtonian laws of physics. And apparently, I mean, if we look at our apparent experience, and we look at the apparent story of our life, we have the story that it took years for us to be drilled and trained and conditioned to describe existence in a certain way. And right now, if we examine our life, if we examine again our apparent storylines and our apparent experience, we will discover that the storyline itself says those descriptions of existence can't be true. Because our apparent experience says that all forms are changing. Essentially, life has no particular form that can be described. So, is it awareness? Well, wait a while. In a while, it'll be unconsciousness. We call that sleep. Is it unconsciousness? Well, just wait a while. In a moment after that, it's going to be waking up. Is it dreaming? Well, wait a while, and it won't be dreaming. Is it not dreaming? Well, wait a while. It'll seem to be dreaming in a while. Is it light? Well, wait a while. It's going to be dark. Is it dark? Well, wait a while. It's going to be light. Is it warm? Well, wait a while. It'll be cold. Is it cold? Well, wait a while. It'll be warm. It has no particular form. Is it clarity? Well, wait a while. It's going to be confusion. Is it joy? Well, wait a while. It's going to be sorrow. And so on, always moving and shifting and dancing. From this perspective, I don't have to be concerned with some miraculous event, like things appearing directly in the palm of my hand, because even this event, with these apparent words coming out, that's a totally miraculous event. It's happening automatically, and there's no way of saying ultimately what any of it is. It's just happening. It's just moving and shifting and dancing. So that's how a Kundalini experience would be fitting in with the larger aspect of what I was presenting. Everything is a totally unexplainable, miraculous dance, a totally unexplainable, miraculous event. You know, yes, for most people, the appearance of something automatically in their hand would be a totally miraculous, unexplainable event. But for someone with a non-dual perspective, even words coming out of their apparent mouth is a totally unexplainable, miraculous event. Or thoughts coming and going is a totally unexplainable, miraculous event. Or washing your face in the morning or brushing your teeth is a totally miraculous, unexplainable event. And, I mean, that's just initially with a non-dual realization. After a while, it's not really miraculous. The emphasis goes on the fact that it's totally indefinable. It's just a totally indefinable happening, and there's no urge to explain it in any way whatsoever. And there's the realization that all of the other explanations are, what's the word? I've asked this before, and people have offered the word bullshit. All of the explanations are ultimately bullshit. They're great. They're great. On an apparent day-to-day basis, the apparent explanations of life apparently are a portion of our apparent functioning. But all of the expressions, all of the explanations, whether it be laws of physics or stories about us functioning on a day-to-day basis or stories of Kundalini experience, it's all bullshit. On any kind of ultimate notion of truth. Okay, another person has written in, I won't read this question out verbatim, but basically, in reading my books, this person has picked up on the fact that I've stated that loving kindness meditations were not really for the purpose of ultimately bringing enlightenment. And that those kinds of practices can't give us the control of, can't give us the power to balance out our behavior in any kind of absolute way. So this person has asked, why did the Buddha advocate compassion meditations? And the answer to this one is very simple, because within the Buddhist scriptures, the Buddha had a teaching where he said, I've taken everything away from you. Like, you know, you can't possess anything. You can't participate in most worldly distractions. You're not allowed to own anything. And so, you know, he says, I don't want to take absolutely everything away from you. So I'm going to leave you a few things that you can indulge in. So he took away most of the worldly indulgences that a person can participate in. So in the evenings, when everyone else is eating a gallon of ice cream, he's saying, if you were a Buddhist monk or a Buddhist nun, you wouldn't be able to eat that gallon of ice cream in the evening. You wouldn't be able to go out and go to a concert. You wouldn't be able to have jewelry and buy new clothes. You wouldn't be able to indulge in most of the worldly indulgences. So basically, he gave a teaching at one point where he said, I'm going to let you indulge in certain things. So if I remember correctly, they were called divine abidings. It's been a long time since I've tried to format things in terms of a Buddhist teaching. So but if I remember correctly, they were called divine abidings, and so you could indulge in loving kindness practices. You could indulge yourself in practices of compassion. You could indulge yourself in practices of sympathetic joy. I think that was one of them. And you could indulge yourself in practices of equanimity. And equanimity practices would be ultimately a kind of concentration practice. So any one of these practices could take you into what were known as jhanic states or concentration states. So you could kind of play with bliss states. And the Buddha declared that ultimately these states can't bring you to enlightenment, but he felt they were a way that you could maybe perhaps soften the strict kind of life that he was presenting, the very simple and sparse life that he was presenting to you or offering to you. You could soften that a bit with these indulgences. And as he said, he had taken everything else away from his followers, his monks and nuns, and he was going to let them play with these kinds of indulgences, even if they didn't bring ultimate enlightenment. Now, this person has also written in saying that the Jewish tradition believes that the first man, by eating from the tree of good and evil, disrupted the harmony, and the bad came out of that situation. And so rules of behavior are for the purpose of repairing what that first person had done. The paradigm seems to be that nature has gone wrong, that we have to improve and develop through a lot of effort. would you please comment on this? So there's really nothing to comment on. Yes, in a lot of spiritual teachings, so-called spiritual teachings, this is the approach that somehow there's an essential sin, an original sin that we all have to overcome, that we all carry some aspect of this original sin. So for instance, in the Bible, the original sin is that we ate of the tree of knowledge, that Adam and Eve ate of the tree of knowledge. And from a non-dual perspective, this would simply be a comment on the fact that pretty much every person on the face of the earth is still eating from the tree of knowledge. They're still putting all of their focus and emphasis on thought, believing that that thought gives them some true understanding of existence. And in that, they suffer because they have all kinds of stories of themselves being in a world of suffering and apparently having control, and yet that control is always frustrated because ultimately we don't have control. So there is this original sin of eating of the tree of knowledge, putting your focus on the world of thought, and there is the suffering that comes from that. And according to the Bible, our whole journey in life is to go back to the garden. And to get back to the garden, well, there are a number of different interpretations of how we get back to the garden. This same person has written in a little later to say that after reading a couple of my books, he or she felt ready to allow their world to collapse after so many years of living with the attempts of trying to be good when their inner world was filled with a fair bit of violence. They're finding that they have the understanding to let it all go. And this person is saying that, as he or she has written it, I jump into life. It is so beautiful. I lose the fake control and gain the natural one. So, yes, that's basically what happens. With this non-dual perspective, we consider life, we consider how it actually presents itself, and we realize that all the way along, it has been the presentation of existence itself, of, you could say, life itself, or ultimately it's just the happening of this moment, presenting itself, eventing. It's the event right now, right here and now, this event, this dynamic event, eventing. And in that, all the control that anybody has ever needed was already present, because whatever you take to be your urge to control, that's the actual movement of life. So the things that you feel you shouldn't be doing, that's the movement of life. It's not your control over life that's holding anything back. If you have a feeling of controlling something, if you have, you know, there are apparent actions that you just can't get yourself to do because it was not your doing in the first place. This is life expressing you. Every one of us is an expression of this larger event of existence. And a short time later, this same person wrote in to say, after the enthusiasm from your teachings, old patterns arise again, showing that being good or bad is happening according to the conditioning of the organism. Even trying to improve or balance the bad with practicing loving kindness meditations is a conditioned response. Now, this is an interesting point, because in a lot of cases, as we apparently awaken to this larger event of life, there can be moments where life is a real rush. It's an excitement about this larger event and the fact that it isn't little me, that this event is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening, and that everything I took to be a personal response, everything I took to be personal conditioning, it's not that. So there's an excitement in that realization, but then there can also be a kind of crash after that, because the old ideas about being personal me, little me, with my conditioned existence, that comes back very strongly. And so there's a kind of flip-flopping in this awakening process a lot of the time. And if we're really expressed in this non-dual manner, if we're really expressed with this apparent non-dual sensibility, what will happen is that flip-flopping will lessen. It may become apparent, or it will become apparent, if you really are expressed with a non-dual sensibility, it will become obvious that when there is this apparent flipping back and feeling as though, oh God, I'm losing all of my freedom, I'm still the same little conditioned person that I always was, and I hoped to get away from all of that, but it hasn't happened. There will be the realization that that is also the expression of existence. This flipping back is also the expression of existence, and that ultimately you are never some small conditioned little being. Those storylines lose their validity. The belief in those storylines eventually fall away. And it will be realized that even the situation where it looks like little me, totally conditioned and unable to behave in a certain way, unable to improve myself in a certain way, that isn't little me unable to improve myself. That is the larger event of existence simply dancing the way it dances. It's a totally unexplainable happening. There isn't any conditioned little you. There isn't any conditioning. There isn't any personal conditioning. These storylines do not apply to what's happening here. The story that my mother and father conditioned me in a certain way, this is the attempt to explain what's happening in life. And it's not a true explanation. Your mother and father were a totally unexplainable event. You are a totally unexplainable event. The apparent story of your mother and father conditioning you, that's ultimately false. That's a totally unexplainable event. Moving and dancing in the only way that it possibly can. Now, all of this is just for your consideration. You know, another way of saying it is that your mother and father behaved in the only way that nature would allow them to behave. They could only behave that way through the body and mind that nature presented, through the abilities and inabilities that nature presented, through the needs, the interests, the concerns that nature presented. And in relation to that expression of nature, your mother and father being an expression of nature, you are also an expression of nature, and you can only behave in the way that nature presents. So in this apparent situation of you responding to something like your parents, it's a matter that nature presents you as a certain body and brain. It presents you as a certain set of abilities and inabilities. It presents you as a certain arrangement of needs, interests, and concerns. You are that expression of nature, and that responds to the apparent expression that your mother and father are, in a certain way, and all of it is moving according to nature, the forces of nature. That would be another way of approaching the fact that it's not little you. We've got another person who has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl, I hope you are well. This is a note of profound appreciation from yet another apparent lifelong seeker. Gosh, I've started into my 70s now, and nothing before your expression of this ever felt real enough or deep enough. Some expressions seem to approach it, glance off, then wander away. I wonder how, in this whole awesome production, you were able to come up with the only clear, true, and helpful direction some of us have ever found." Well, I appreciate those words. And for you, it may be that this expression is very clear and very true and very helpful. But I would like to point out that this isn't the only clear, true, and helpful direction, and that I have nothing to do with my expression. All of this is a totally unexplainable event to me. So again, I appreciate those words. I just wanted to point out here that in this whole awesome production, it's not that I was able to come up with a clear, true, and helpful direction. It's simply, whatever this is, it's simply expressing itself the way it expresses itself. And I'm very happy that it's apparently very supportive to certain others. Okay, moving on. I have another person who's written on saying, "Hi, Daryl. I want to thank you for your efforts to share the message you are sharing through your website and interviews, even if the cause of that is a totally mysterious event expressing itself in that way. As part of that same mysterious apparent event, I appreciate it." Now, this person goes on to explain that they've been on an apparent spiritual quest for the last 15 years or so. They've been intrigued by Advaita teachings and many of the historical teachers in that tradition. They've read Ramana Maharshi, and the last 7 years or so have been filled with a great many books, teachers, videos, websites, etc. About a year ago, they found that they couldn't read any more spiritual material on any tradition. They feel that the fever for it had somehow broken. But they would still find themselves looking around the internet and watching the occasional video. There was a hope that they would have some new kind of experiential event which would cause a shift in their perception, and that would give the feeling that the answer had been found. Over the years, they had been running across the idea of non-doership, or the notion that there is no doer. And initially they would get very irritated by that. But over the apparent passage of time, they've come to feel that that expression, that notion, it very much matches their experience of life. And so this person has written in saying, "The more I listen to your talks and your recorded questions answered on your webpage, the more this message just strikes a chord and makes total sense to me. It also seems to increase the sense of ease and flexibility with life, almost like a surrendering to this moment, whatever it is. There still feels like a sense of an individual self, but I assume this is just what this particular apparent moment in time is expressing. This person writes, I wish I had some big question to ask. You are the first person I have come across that left me questionless. There is a feeling of wanting to ask, what can I do to increase the understanding or experience of this, that there is no doer? But I intuitively know right away that if I really understand what you are saying, then this question makes no sense whatsoever. However, any comments or things you would like to share on what I have said would be most welcomed. Thank you for taking the time to read this email and for responding if you choose to do so. I truly appreciate what you are doing and your message. Thanks. What this person has written basically reflects what we would be considered the awakening process within a non-dual teaching, that initially one might hear a non-dual perspective being presented and actually be irritated by it and really refuse it in some way, even if we are displaying an apparent interest in non-dual teachings, in Advaita teachings and certain other spiritual teachings, which ultimately we would be considered a non-dual teaching. And within that, we may run up against the idea of there being no doer of anything that happens. And so as this person has written, I would hear the famous quote, events happen, deeds are done, but there is no individual doer thereof. And for quite a while, I refused to take it seriously or give it any real credence. There were times I would hear it and get irritated. And that can happen a lot of the time, that we hear the most fundamental teaching of a non-dual perspective, and everything in our process refuses it. We don't want to hear it, but the fact of the matter is it's already gone in, apparently. And really all that's happening is that a non-dual teaching is pointing to certain simple aspects of our life that are quite obvious, and pointing out that those aspects don't match up with our usual assumptions about life, our assumptions that we can explain life, the assumptions that we're in charge of life. A non-dual perspective simply points to our common experience of life and points out that that does not match our general assumptions about life. And so, without any effort at all, in a lot of apparent cases, just simply pointing to our actual experience, it begins to undermine the usual assumptions. And after a while, some of the teachings, some of the statements within a non-dual perspective, they seem to make more sense. And it's just a matter that within our own apparent process, the pointing to our actual experience has allowed us to consider that, yes, it's true. In my daily experience, my general assumptions are not supported by my actual experience. Now, at some point, there may be the situation where it's becoming more and more obvious that the non-dual perspective seems to fit life, fit my experience of life more than any other perspective. And so there's an urge to try to push that There's an urge to try to increase the speed at which it makes sense. We begin to feel that there's a certain amount of freedom, there's a certain amount of ease in our so-called relationship to life with this non-dual sensibility, and now all of a sudden we get greedy. We want it to be moving faster. We want to fall totally into something called enlightenment. But it doesn't work that way. It has its own pace, and it's unique for each and every apparent person. As this person writes, there is a feeling of wanting to ask, what can I do to increase the understanding or experience of this, that there is no doer? But I intuitively know right away that if I really understand what you are saying, then this question makes no sense whatsoever. And here is the conundrum of these teachings. Way back, apparently way back, maybe 2800 years ago, in the Ashtavakra Gita, it simply states, it is an illusion that you seem to be living in a world of suffering. So it is an illusion that there is a body and a mind. It is an illusion that you are in charge of your existence. It is an illusion that there is a world. It is an illusion that there is some definable event here. And it simply states that the only cure for this illusion is to see that it's false. And that's all that's taking place within this apparent non-dual awakening. It's simply the acknowledgement that this old perspective is false. Now, if you're already acknowledging that, that's all there is to it. And within this apparent awakening process, which is not really an awakening process, all of this is the movement of a totally unexplainable event. It's the expression of a totally unexplainable event. It has never been you coming to some understanding. It's the falling away of those ideas. It's the melting away of the belief in those ideas. The apparent ideas will still come and go, but the belief that this dynamic, the movement of those stories, the movement of apparent words and thoughts, the movement that we thought was our own doing, that movement is a totally unexplainable dynamic. And that's all that's ever happening. So it's not a matter of you having moved yourself to this understanding. It's a fact that this is a totally unexplainable happening, and for a while it seemed to express a you that was confused or a you that had a certain set of ideas, and now it's expressing an apparent you in a different way. And it has never been the fact of you moving yourself to this non-dual understanding. It will never be a you moving yourself in this direction. Life is expressing apparent you in this way. So there is simply this event, this happening, this dynamic expressing itself. That's all that's ever been happening. That's all that can ever happen. And so from this non-dual perspective, what happens is what seems to happen in a lot of cases is, however the mind wants to move on this, it becomes blocked in that direction. However the mind wants to regain control, it's blocked in that effort to gain control or to push life faster or to gain more understanding. Because there's the realization that it's never been a me doing anything. All of this is simply a totally mysterious event moving at its own pace. However, in this apparent journey, if it's expressing you, in this way, if it's expressing you as relating to a non-dual perspective, it's automatically moving you in that direction. And it will continue to apparently express you in that way in a deeper and deeper manner. And so it's in each and any moment, it's just a simple acknowledgement that all of this is presenting itself. It's simply happening the way it happens. Or it's simply expressing itself. Whatever this is simply expressing itself in this way. And it's expressing an apparent you with an apparent non-dual sensibility. So it's apparently awakening you. But all of that is false too. It's just this totally mysterious event doing what it does. So yes, intuitively we know that even if there is a feeling of wanting to increase the understanding, to move ahead, to move more into this feeling of non-doership, that we can't push it because it's already non-doership. And so it's a simple acknowledgement in any moment that it's not us doing it. There's just the happening of this moment. And, you know, for some, it's appropriate that if they want a very clear sense of this, they simply sit down from moment to moment, or in the occasional moment, they may sit down and in a very obvious way, acknowledge the fact that even when they do absolutely nothing at all, the moment expresses itself. Everything they are expresses itself all on its own. And for others, even in the busyness of their life, it's just a simple acknowledgement that all of it is expressing itself. There's no way of pointing out any particular method or technique for moving in this direction, because there's never been any method or technique that's been doing this. All of it is a totally inexplicable event expressing itself. And so once there's this acknowledgement of this event, and if it apparently is moving you further and further into this non-dual sensibility, we can relax, because that's the way it's going to express you, as having a non-dual sensibility. And all of that can't really be explained in any way whatsoever. It's not a you. It's not a world. It's not an awakening. It's not a non-dual sensibility. It's the simple acknowledgement that there's no way of saying what any of this is. It's not us doing it. It has never been a situation of us doing it. And without any effort at all, without any conscious effort at all, without any attempt to make effort at all, the whole thing will go on expressing itself. And if it's already expressing a certain non-dual sensibility, it will go on to express that in a deeper and deeper fashion. Okay, this has already run on a little over an hour. So we'll end it here, and we'll complete this in a second segment. So I find that too much of this is just like, if it goes on for more than an hour, it's already too much of this at any one go. So take a break, and when you're ready to come back to it, just click on the second segment.